Welcome, welcome to the Most High Show. I am your host, Reverend Christian Jansen. With me today is a good friend of mine, Dean. We're going to be having a conversation about meditation, about connecting to whatever God is. It's going to be an interesting kind of departure from our normal nuts and bolts show. David is taking the night off to hang out with his grandchild, if you can believe that. His old ass got a grandchild.
Nice.
And all that's coming up on the Most High Show.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
So, what is meditation? People talk about meditation. First thing I want to start off, talking shit a little bit. What's really interesting to me is so many people are turned off, in especially in America, by religion, right? And so they all start drifting towards the Eastern religions, right? And in seminary, when we studied, we started with Hinduism, right? Which, as I'm trying to learn this Eastern mind, I have no handles for that, because it is not bound by the same Greek logic that us Westerners are bound by, right? Westerners are bound by this very binary, dualistic, good bad logic, right? So we start with Hinduism, which was blew my mind, a beautiful practice. Then Buddhism, which the only way I could get into understanding that Eastern framework of Buddhism was through a monk who died recently, Thich Nhat Hanh, French monk. And he wrote this book called Living Buddha, Living Christ. So he connects the Christ framework to the Buddhism framework, right? And I'm an interfaith seminary, which is about these bridge-building concepts, right? So that was my first kind of look into this Eastern thing. But even then, again, I have this Western mind, right, where I want to put things into categories. And what I found was they operate in a different level, right? And the concept of meditation, like, at least from a novice point of view, it looks attractive. It's attractive because it's not the thing that we've been told to do. But to actually practice it, to actually seek the discipline, to actually try it, is something completely different. So what always makes me kind of laugh and cringe a little bit is when a lot of us Westerners kind of go and we get into this Eastern stuff because we think that it's an easier, softer approach, when actually Buddhism, Hinduism is actually much more strict than a lot of our religious practices here in America. I don't know. It was just a statement I felt like I wanted to make.
Yeah.
Because I've never gotten to make that statement before.
I think you're right on.
I mean, I
see your perspective on it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you could take it way back, and, you know, there's a group in India that say Mary, Jesus's mom, is buried there, you know, and it's a sacred site. It's a highly visited site because they thought Jesus was from India. I mean, and that's where it all started. So maybe.
Well, the thing is, too, that this is what people don't understand, is the culture of that day, right? Whenever Jesus, the human form, would have been around. But in seminary, my dean, she told me, she said, I want you to try something. Whatever you think is complete bullshit, I want you to try it. So I said, okay. I don't know if I've ever told you this story. Mm-mm,
never heard it.
So I go, okay, well, chakras sound like complete bullshit to me. So this is a few years ago, right? And I'm being honest. Like, I'm in this journey of interfaith seminary.
Sounds like some pop singer. What? Chakra.
Yeah. Right. So I'm like, that sounds like complete bullshit. So there was a chakra reading right by the house. So I went and I told the lady, honestly, I said, listen, I'm here. I'm in seminary. I'm studying. And my dean has asked me to do something that I don't really believe in, right? That I complete is that I think is full of shit. She says, okay, no problem. So I lay on this basically like a massage table. Have you ever had a chakra reading?
No.
Okay. So she takes this like, it's like, it almost looks like a top, like a spinning
a chakra meter.
It's a chakra meter. And she, have you haven't had this done, Kale? So she'll hang it where your chakras are. Right now, I'm not versed in the chakras, but I know there's like one here, mm-hmm. here. It's like a throat chakra, then there's like a sacrum and this whole. So she hangs it over these parts. Now, if it does a circle, well, I can't remember if that's good or bad, or if it goes back and forth, if what's that good or bad, right? But it's one of those two. And she could tell whether I was in alignment or out of alignment. So she's hanging the string.
Right? What do you think?
Well, first off, I'm thinking that she's turning the string, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when she, after she did the reading, the assessment, she wasn't far off with her assessment of where I was spiritually. I wouldn't just say spiritually. I would say psychologically and spiritually. She kind of called it. And I said, oh, that's interesting. And I told her I thought it was complete bullshit. And she went on to tell me that what... She's a Christian scientist, whatever that is. Now it's, and she says that the reason why we even have this chakra system was a monk asked their abbot, how did Jesus perform his healings? And in those culture, if the abbot didn't know, the abbot had to go find out. So the abbot left. It took 10 years to find how Jesus really did the healings. And according to her, this monk came back and said, Jesus healed using the chakras and created the chakra system. Isn't that interesting?
Crazy.
I never heard that before. I don't know how true or accurate it was. She certainly seemed to believe it. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got this little book called Gita. G-E-E-T-A. It is a Cliff Notes version of the Bhagavad Gita. Right? Mm-hmm. And... you know, it's which is really about God talking to this guy who's like a general going to war, right? That's what the whole story is. Mm-hmm. And some say that in that book are all the lessons you need in life. Everything is in that conversation between God and this guy. It's pretty simple. Mm. But it's posed in a certain way to put a situation where it could mean, it could relate to a lot of different people. But anyway, in that book... there's a description. It's 5,000 years old. And there's a description of a certain type of yoga that you've got to be trained to do in order to attain it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they call it like effort yoga. And it was in Sanskrit, the word effort or hard work is kriya. And so it comes from that long ago. And it's the it's controlling the energies in the body over time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a, have you ever heard of it? I mean, we've had a couple conversations, but have you heard of the whole?
No, I've never heard of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a.
I mean, just from the conversations that we've had about it and your experience through it, which we're going to get into a little bit. I'd like for you to share that. And, but I think the thing that, so over the course of these years, I have been dipping my toe into Buddhism and Buddhist concepts, but I always have to come at it from a different through a framework. So I need a translator. And so the last book I've read was a fantastic book called One Breath at a Time. And this guy is he's a meditator, Buddhist practitioner, and he's in the 12 steps. He's in recovery. So he goes and takes all the tenets and the precepts and the pillars of Buddhism, and he connects them to all the steps and how important meditation is. And that book was one of the most, that book did the most for me in my meditation. Wow. It opened up my meditation. It took a lot of my judgment out of it, and to where now I can slip into meditation much easier. But for me, what I mean by meditation is I sit, I try to sit comfortably. I close my eyes to remove a lot of the external information that's coming in with my eyes. And I focus on my breath and I count. And I kind of do box breathing. Breathe in 4, hold 4, breathe out 8. I can do that and just sit and shut up and close my eyes.
Yeah.
And me and Kale were talking about this last night and how wonderful the secret is. All it really takes is to just sit down and shut up for 5 minutes and you kind of, I connect to something.
Yeah.
I connect to it myself or something. So that's kind of my spiel. That's my information on meditation, right? It's been key in my life. And we'll get into some other kind of meditation practices that I am familiar with. But I want to know a little bit about this Kriya Yoga and this meditation that you got into. And also just a little bit of background of what led you to even searching this out.
Yeah, it was, kind of lost soul as a kid, you know, and not a lot of parental guidance. My mom had an alcohol problem. My dad had an anger problem, and he wasn't around that much, always working. And I was a human doing instead of a human being. You were what you did. You were, your value is what you accomplished, you know, so I wasn't feeling at all at home anyway. I started using different substances so I wouldn't feel. I'd numb out, and you know, did that for a lot of years, headed in the wrong direction, and then started to straighten up. Got into some trouble, started to straighten up, and then got with some an old man that put me on the right path, and. Then he said, you need, you know, you're pretty high strung, Dean. You need to learn how to meditate. And I said, he goes, you're going to have to get more centered yourself. You need to become congruent, you know. And he would touch his forehead. And he said, what you think and what you say and how you feel and how you act needs to be in alignment, man. And your mind is jumping all over the place all the time. So you need to become calm. Or learn how to manage those emotions and don't let them run you. So he tasked me with doing a number of different things. I was about 7 or 8 years sober, and I said, you know, I hear a lot of people say they're happy, joyous, and free. How come I don't get that? And he says, well, you're halfway in.
Yeah.
You're not really committed. You left a little hatchway in the back of your brain that someday you could go out and drink and use and be hips looking cool. And your ego wants that opportunity. Sometime it wants to go back up. Instead of flattening it out, your ego, which is fear-driven, wants to pop back up and turn back into life. So in order to put it to death, you have to see the other side. You have to totally, totally give in to meditation and learn that your consciousness is separate from you. You have your ego, is who you think you are and who you think I think you are. And then you get your physical body. Yeah. But that thing that's there, that viewing thing, when you can look around and you can take in colors and numbers and everything, immediately that awareness thing and the temperature that's around you and all your senses working together, that's consciousness.
Yeah.
And he used to tell me that that's separate. It's ongoing and it's separate from the human body and it's from the concept of who you think you are. That's all the thinking mind. Which is your,
so that's separate from this who you think you are.
Your consciousness is separate.
Would you say that consciousness is the same as a collective consciousness that we all would share together?
You can tap into the collective consciousness, I think.
Through this.
You know, you go back to Carl Jung. Carl Jung talked about, to Roland Hazard, about stop and drink, and hey, you got to find something else beyond the physical world to help you. Mm. Go pick one of the spiritual solutions. But after that, he wrote a lot of books about synchronicity that he believed. Mm. So whether it was part of a one mass mind, a collective conscience, which you could take in the context of people believing the same thing, but he meant it in a pure way that the that there was a another finer degree of wavelengths, that thoughts, ideas, concepts, intentions, prayer all might travel in. And the problem is that human beings are so grounded and welded to the physical being, because they taste food, they eat food, they breathe air. You know, all the clumsy stuff, all the clumsy big molecules, you know, that we're, you know, we lose fact that some God energy came from somewhere. It got some dirt and some minerals and mixed them together and made a human being. You know, we're like, why is that?
And then we walk around and think that's us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the fact that could happen, that God, but there, yeah, that energy that caused it to begin with.
Right.
You know, maybe there's something more there. So,
yeah.
But anyway, my sponsor basically said, dude, get your shit together. You're halfway in. Commit to it. Fake it till you make it in some areas. And close the door. And so anyway, I went to the library and put in fastest way to God, you know, through meditation. And I'm like, I want to know. Yeah, because I'll do the hard work. Just give it to me. You know, why am I going to take the long way around the globe if I can go straight through? And I don't want this bearded dude telling me what to do, because I always felt judged. It just didn't feel right. And, you know, and like, yeah, he's going to beat me if I don't do it right. How, you know, how am I going to get over that?
Right.
So it didn't. So it's just for me, it was tough. I just wanted to keep it about business and get straight there. I want to get better now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I put it in, and this thing popped up called Kriya Yoga. I'm like, what is that? So I start looking at it, and Kriya means effort in Sanskrit. It's hard work, yoga. And the word yoga really didn't originally have anything to do with like stretching and stuff like that. And, you know, it was a way of life. You stretch your body. You ate basically plants only. And you lived right, lots of water, hydration, lots of exercise. And you prepared your body to sit, which was yoga. You know, it's a real core of it was sitting.
Yeah.
And breathing right to get yourself there. And then once those, you know, just it says that once those areas are awakened, they can be reawakened pretty easily. So this part of your brain that is already oriented toward it is just that your thinking brain never gives it a chance to come up, which is, you know.
Right.
Which is why it wants to, you know, it, why when you shut your thinking brain down, it appears. But, and it was in the, it's 5,000 years old, and it is talked about in that book long, long ago. So that is how I got into it. I went to the library and popped it up.
Fastest way to God.
That's okay. Basically it.
Well, so we researched some of this. Kale was helping, and because they did a study on some monks and their brain, and what's happening in their brain, right? And why their brain is their brain different? Is their neural activity different, right? So this says that.
But that's interesting.
Yeah. So the default mode network, where the network responsible for mind wandering, self-reflective thoughts, the me center. What was that? What was that part? What'd you pull that for, Kale? Ego deflation. So meditation isn't a one and done fix, but it quiets the effects of the DMN, the default mode network, when your brain starts to wander too far in either direction. Because of the new connections that are formed, meditators are unable to snap back out of it. And that's one of the things I noticed from practicing meditation, is the ability to choose what thought I want to continue with.
Exactly.
And that's not any brilliance on my part. It's a lot of banging my head against the wall to realize, oh, every time I follow this stupid thought, I get into this miserable place. But meditation has helped me to be able to, all right, I don't need to follow that thought anymore. I can move. Let's leave that alone.
And you can actually do it.
And I can actually do it.
Yeah. Exercising the mind, and maybe it's reducing compulsive thought, which, you know, I have sponsees that say, yeah, I'm just thinking. I said, what are you thinking about? But if you think the same thing over and over, that's not thinking.
Ah, what is that?
Compulsive thought. You're not really, there's no effort going into it. What it is obsessing.
Yeah.
And they say, I was just thinking about something. You're thinking about the same thing over and over is not thinking.
Yeah. It's obsessing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for you, when you found this Kriya, what was it like when you first stepped into it? Can you remember like the first day you went into?
So I went in pretty skeptical to this old church, and I called up, and this lady says, yes, please come by. She had this very sweet Argentinian voice, a Spanish accent. And I showed up, and there was somebody else there that I knew, and there was about five of us sitting around. You take your shoes off, you go in, and you're quiet. And she said, we are in the middle of doing a series of guided meditations, and I want to teach you how to meditate this specific way. It is the oldest type of known meditation, yoga. It goes back 5,000 years, and it is work, and it's a lot of effort, and if you choose not to do it, you don't have to. I don't want you to feel obligated. If you're free to give any donations if you'd like, and that's it. So wow. I started going and sitting, and I had a problem, really fidgety.
Yeah.
And
how'd you deal with that when you're first sitting down and you're feeling that fidgetiness? How'd you deal with that?
She was great. Would walk me with that wonderful Argentinian voice and would walk you through it. You know, she would say,
so she was slowing down.
She was slowing everything down, and she would have a candle in the room, and she would say, stare at the candle. And long enough so it bothers your eyes a little bit, then close your eyes, stare at that spot. Empty your mind. Your mind is like a chalkboard. And imagine every time a thought comes by, an eraser comes to empty it. The key is mindlessness. We're trying to shut down your thinking mind. It is separate from the part of your body, the part of your brain that we want to ignite. And your other one will come to life if we keep the other one quiet enough.
Mm.
So over and over and over, and I was, you know, I'd come back and she says, just keep doing it. Just keep doing it. And then she would say, you'll see more colors. And then I saw purple and violet and this and that. And we sat and I felt better. You know, I felt calmer. I felt more balanced. I felt like I was connecting to something. We did certain breathing exercises. We talk about the energy that's in the air and how it is the link between energy and our bodies. Oxygen is the thoroughfare. I mean, that brings in the energy and allows us to ignite the basically what is a battery floating in fluid is the way she would describe it. Your brain is essentially, you know, she would say it's not really matter. Everything is energy, and your battery and your spinal cord are essentially, I mean, your brain and your spinal cord are essentially a battery floating in fluid. So, and your thoughts are uncontrolled or jumping all over the place. So if you can get control of those,
yeah,
you can do wondrous things, and it doesn't happen overnight. And it allows you to leave a lot of the rest of life to the side. Or in other words, you're not concerned about a lot of those things because everything falls into place.
So let me interject in there. So what happens in that bouncing monkey mind going, right, is the nervous system is responding in kind to this bouncing monkey mind, right? So what do we think the nervous system is doing when the mind's going everywhere, right, and worrying and fear and protection and
wearing it out probably.
And then your nervous system's responding to that. It doesn't, yes.
Man.
So the nervous system thinks there's a fucking tiger in the room.
Yeah.
It doesn't know that the brain's just tripping on, you know, not getting their order right or something. Yeah. What did they think about me when I said that, you know?
Oh, my God. And then 2 seconds later, who ate my peanut butter sandwich? When are they going to take the trash out? Am I late? It's like, boom.
God,
boom,
I wish
boom,
I could boom. Snorkel gain. What's going on? I don't know. I can't remember. What? Yeah, the nervous system responding to all this, and when your nervous system is taxed continually, there was a study about they were looking to see what was the determining factor for viral infection. to be infected by a virus, right? So they did this study where they took put a bunch of people in hotel rooms, separated them all. They gave some people a very good diet, a lot of rest. Some people they gave not as good of a diet. And then they exposed everybody to this virus, right, through a swab of the nose. Well, what they found was it was like 40% of the people didn't get the infection, right? So then they had to go, well, then, number one, that tells us that exposure to the virus is not a determining factor to infection of a virus.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Not everybody got it.
Because not everybody got it. So then, well, then why didn't everyone get it? And what they were able to determine were there were socioeconomic situations for several of the people who did get infected, like uncertainty about job security, financial strain.
Only eat ramen noodles.
Yeah. Family members. So what they determined by this study, and I wish I could cite it, you know, but what they determined was what was the determining factor for infection was actually the nervous system.
Mm. Crazy.
Yeah. Had nothing to do with the person's physical health. It was the health of the nervous system. So people who had a better general sense of well-being were less likely to be infected by the virus, essentially.
It's crazy.
Crazy, right? So if you think about this, what we're talking about, right? Like, you're literally, when your mind is doing this monkey mind and your nervous system is in complete disarray and freaking out all the freaking time. You're at risk. You're at risk. There's also, if you don't believe that, let me give you another thing called the ACE, Adverse Childhood Experience Test. You can take this ACE test and basically they can correlate. If you had adverse child experiences like sexual abuse, physical abuse, neglect, verbally abusive parents, uncertainty in your home, they can correlate. If you had these adverse childhood experiences, they can correlate to heart disease, getting cancer, getting diabetes. Hmm. They can correlate based on if you've had these adverse childhood experiences, because when you're young and everything's developing, it'll put your nervous system on high alert. And when your nervous system is always on high alert, what do you think is going to happen? It gets burned out, and you're more susceptible to these diseases. Have you heard about that?
Yeah. I knew some of that. I didn't know that extreme, though. Yeah, I know that one guy. It's the Wim Hof.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff that backs up why he does what he does is that, you know, the difficulties of life or us taking and personalizing it and our personal histories hanging on to a lot of old baggage,
yeah,
not letting it go, right. And anyway, he's the guy that jumps into the ice water,
yeah,
to
hike himself Mount Everest in shorts
makes himself impenetrable to disease. So
yeah. But so I'm saying all that to say that this concept of meditation is, it's not just about calming your mind, right? Because you can actually heal the body in some sense.
Good for your body.
Right? By calming that nervous system, by having that ability to respond rather than react, you know? Yeah.
I think I've spent a lot of my, you know, most of my life, a fairly high-strung guy, but my body has always made a lot of cholesterol.
Huh.
You know, and I think that might be, you know, doctors seem to think that you make extra cholesterol because your body's pushing it all the time, or could be, you know.
Right.
So,
is it cholesterol or cortisol?
Cholesterol.
Cholesterol.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, my liver makes a bunch of it, he said. Mm. So, I don't know.
So, when you're doing this Kriya, the breathing portion of it. I remember you telling me about this. Tell me about the breathing, and then tell me what ultimately happened as a result of your practicing this.
So if you can imagine, it's about, you know, getting comfortable in your chair or whatever position you're going to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And breathing, but prior to that, you're going to do some basic stuff and expanding your lungs in and out, your right nostril, your left nostril, that sort of stuff. And then you are going to breathe through either one, right? They'll do switching because it affects different parts of your body, whoa, different lungs. So
how can you control that? You can control that?
With your fingers.
Oh, okay. All right.
And you're doing deep breathing, and then you're starting visualization. And, you know, in modern times, it stems from the fact that they have measured photons, you know, through laboratory experiments, that measuring light beams and photons,
mm-hmm,
hitting a wall or coming through a hole of a certain size. And they can prove that the photons actually change. The material things change from viewing.
Huh.
That basic premise they knew long ago. So if you put both pinkies up and you're staring at one of them and you're imagining the blood flow to both of your pinkies, you're thinking about it, but you're staring at one of them, the one that you're staring at is going to have a greater blood flow. The fact that you're looking at it, and the fact that it's, you're imagining that pinky in your mind will increase the blood flow. So if you can have a visual picture of something in your mind, it will increase your mind is focused on it, so it increases the capacity for blood flow.
Okay.
You already talked about the chakras. Essentially, the chakras are where your nerves and your blood, your veins and arteries cross.
Okay.
You know, so a bunch of them cross at certain spots of your body, so of course you're giving off more energy.
Yeah.
So that makes kind of sense.
Right.
So in Kriya, you are focusing your mind on these different areas and imagining them over and over and over and breathing in between each one and breathing in certain matters, certain ways. You could almost call it, some people say it hyperventilation, but it's a, you're keeping the pressure a certain way or trying to, and you're trying to breathe in a certain manner without getting too technical. And so what you do is visualize the exact, that chakra with everyone in the room, and it could be a guided meditation, and she runs through it over and over and over. So I would want you to imagine the chakra here, or the crown chakra, and you're rotating all the way around, and everybody in the room is imagining that part of their body. It's important to actually think of it.
Yeah.
And you're rotating over and over and over. And by a certain type of breathing, you're increasing the pressure outside of your bloodstream slightly, so it goes into it. And you're over-oxygenating, almost hyperventilating, but you're not, for periods of time. And so it will really oxygenate your blood while you're focusing on this area. So you are creating excess energy, so to speak, in your blood, in your body, at these points.
Okay.
So, and when you're done, you feel very, very relaxed. And if you keep on doing it over time, I can only talk about my own experience. She would say, just keep doing it. Just keep coming back. You'll finally see a hallway. And then one day, during meditation and afterward, a hallway showed up. And I was like, well, just keep going. Keep going. There'll be a doorway at the end of it. So another 6 months, I think, and then a doorway appeared. And the whole time, I'm calm. My life's getting better. I feel great, you know? And I'm like, well, this is the real deal.
How often are you practicing this during the week?
We were doing it twice a week then. But then I was doing it for maybe 20 minutes a day at home.
Okay.
Just to,
so and, this is, you, and you I integrated it as a part of your life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it changed everything. And then she got where we were doing 2.5 or 3 hours, and it felt like 20 minutes. It's crazy.
Wow.
And then, you know, the door opened, and then, you know, I guess I didn't really go anywhere at that point. I just felt calm, and my life was good. But then after that, unrelated to being there, I had some experiences, and I would think I had four of them, really, and maybe a minute long or 5 minutes long. I don't know how long, but, and I might be crazy, but I think your consciousness becomes separate. It's a separate entity.
So this was like during one of your home personal devotional.
No, it was weird. I was actually the first one. I was like working on the lawnmower or something like that. I was just singing in a good mood. Sunshine was up, and I was just like that.
So maybe you were like in a flow state, maybe?
I don't know if that had anything to do with it at all. Maybe I just had built up, or that the rest of me was calm enough, you know, and I was just down, or everything. Maybe I was flowing, but I was relaxed. And then, you know, I was just outside myself.
So you're talking about like this is like a visualization, or?
I'm talking about.
Like a hallucination? Or
no, I'm talking about the most absolute, comprehensive, overwhelming feeling that's ever come over me. And I've done a lot of different drugs and drank a lot of stuff and skydived and motorcycle, you know. This was not even, this is way, way beyond that. And the overarching feeling is that there's an energy and it's everything. Like, I know it's crazy, but the table is connected to your leg and it's the same exact energy as the road, as everything. So it's not even energy. It's not matter. It's energy. And it's the same thing. And it radiates the same feeling, which is love. It's all the same thing. It's in me. It's in you. It's everywhere. It's crazy.
Well, it's not that crazy, right? If you think about an atom.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
You think about what an atom is, the building blocks of matter.
Yes.
And atoms are 99.99% space.
Yeah.
Right? And what are atoms? Are protons and neutrons, and protons and electrons and protons moving around the neutron, right? So it's actually energy.
Yeah. Right?
That binds together and creates molecules and creates matter, right? So what you're saying isn't that far off.
No, and I guess the part I meant with it, that it's far off is for such a drastic and comprehensive concept to be digested by my mind. Like it was, it's not like, hey, let me check, well, this could be good or not. It was like, it washed over me.
It passed through, and I'm going,
yeah. Wow, that's the deepest truth of all. Woo, you know, in no time. And
while you're working on a lawnmower.
While I'm working on a lawnmower. And then another time I was running over at Emory and at the park, and I'm sitting there, and I was out. I was in, you know, I was above me. And I'm just sitting in it going, oh my God, this is, you know, this is connected to the cosmos, man. This is like the whole, this is the deal. And then every time that I would try to, and it was strange, it wasn't a judgment, but whenever I brought my thinking mind back in, like to look at something to think, is that green or not green? That, just that simple task or thought requires judgment of something or other, which is your thinking mind. So I had to refrain from anything like that, because as soon as you do it, everything evaporates.
Yeah.
So, and to just sit there in pure bliss and joy, and to see clearly the smallness of everything, the tininess. So is that God? Maybe that is God. That's that radiant energy that's everywhere. And if you could just fall into it and stay,
yeah,
which is, I don't know. And as a way of life in India, that's their thing, is to get there.
Yeah.
You know, societally speaking, that's what they're after.
Yeah.
The people that do it, the guys that walk around in a loincloth, you know, they put food out for them because they've chosen, and they don't bathe. Other people come to bathe them so they don't think about their humanness, you know, and in certain situations. And, you know, they are respected because they're taking the difficult, hard path. They're not, as my sponsor would say, playing in the sandbox. He goes, you know, because he's like, Dean, you've had that experience, and here you are back at work.
Yeah.
You know, how do you do that? How do you justify that? How does it fit?
Yeah.
You know, in a way, I'm hypocritical. I'm a hypocrite. You know, why wouldn't I do that all the time?
Yeah. Why wouldn't you?
I did for years. Then I was a dad, and then after there's no reason why I wouldn't. I became a high altitude climber. I'm playing in the sandbox. That's the issue with my sponsor. He said, get rid of all your stuff.
Yeah.
Go help. Be of service. Get out of self. Whatever it takes to shrink that ego, do it. Love on others and destroy the concept of self and stay in service. You got enough money. Go do it. And I'm like, okay. but there's a new like four-wheel drive Land Cruiser that it's coming out in 22.
I had been listening to this lecture by Ram Dass. I've listened to it for years when I go to bed, so sometimes I can't sleep, or I don't have that issue now, but there was a lot of time where I would go to lay down and my mind would get really active. And so I had to put something on. I used to put on, in early recovery, I put on Charles Stanley, who just passed away.
Yeah.
Rest in peace. But his voice was so calm and assuring, and he was so certain with his words. And then eventually I, listened to other stuff, and then I got into Ram Dass, and he has this lecture called Nowhere to Stand. And, well, the first time I listened to it, I thought Nowhere to Stand meant that the room was packed.
I think you've sent me some of his quotes before.
I've sent you, yeah. So I've been listening to this Nowhere to Stand for probably 3 years at least, and maybe seven times a year, right? So I've listened to this a lot. Well, one day, I finally got what he's been talking about, right? That you have these experiences, like this is it, out of, I don't want to say ethereal, it's out of body, spiritual. It's an experience, right? But you can't stand there, because eventually you got to, pay your taxes, right?
Yeah.
And so, but you also can't stand there where you're the tax-paying guy, right? It's like I'm a dad, and that's an important role in my life. But I can't stand in the role of dad, because I'm also a seeker, and I'm a spiritual being, and I'm looking for the deeper truth of everything, right? So, but I can't stand there. So this nowhere to stand concept I got, and I was like, oh, it's okay that I'm kind of in this place and I move, right? And that I'm not becoming too attached. That's the trick, I think. It's to not become too attached to any one of these identities that I have.
Dependent
on it. Yeah. Because that's when I will have unnecessary suffering. When I'm trying to constantly manifest that, what you're explaining, like this connectedness to God or God consciousness, if I'm trying to live in that, right, like I'm going to end up fabricating it. I'm going to end up like pretending it, imagining it, instead of like actually just experiencing it. Does that make sense? So I have to be able to know that I can move, and I need to be able to know that it's okay that I'm moving from all these aspects of myself, right? That I'm all these things and I'm none of them at the same time. So that's just to give you some credit for going back into the sandbox,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was enough to... I totally changed my life.
Yeah.
In 4 60-second slots, I totally changed who I was.
Yeah.
So it is structurally changed, and I became more of service, and I haven't stopped sponsoring guys and staying out of self, just...
Yeah.
And, taking more pain, taking more bullets.
Yeah.
For, like, Tucker, the guy we sponsored, Tucker ruined my elevator, like $3,000, and then ended up frying Reed's truck, which was just living with the selfishness of, but trying to be there enough, let them take some bites out of you in order to watch them through a longer term cycle and get better. Yeah. I've been a little more forgiving and patient. So, what I mean?
Yeah.
So, which is not easy, from who I used to be.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and, kind of bringing it full circle. I mean, I think for me, fundamentally, that's what the Jesus message is, right? Is that love requires something of us. And that for me to just say I love you, or say I love my kids, but I don't clothe them and feed them and protect them and guide them, that's not love, right? So real love requires something of me.
It's a verb.
And that's all over. That's the whole story to me. And one of the main stories of this, when you look at the Jesus story, is that, look, you got to do something. You can't just idly sit by and believe the right things. You have to live this stuff.
Yeah, love is an action.
Yeah.
It's what you do for others, and you can define somebody by looking at their actions. They don't have to speak. They don't have to say anything. They don't have to write anything. Look at what they do.
Yeah.
You know, and that will tell you who they are. You know, and if
you might not like it, but if you, yeah.
And, it'll also watch them, and they'll tell you whether you want them in your sphere or in your circle. You don't need to have them. But there's others that you see it there and you believe in them. So I think you can hold their hand as they're getting better. And, you know, sometimes the arc of God is long, you know, so you gotta be patient. So,
yeah. Well, we had some other things on meditation. We're about wrapping up here now. But let's see.
The most important thing is to search, you know, seek.
Yeah.
That just that intention of looking for something to find something to live in a calmer way, to live a healthier life, to maybe get rid of some of the dysfunction that's out there and not partake in things that might be bad for you long term.
Yeah.
Or that you makes you feel bad about things yourself.
Yeah.
You know, starting to take a step in the right direction. It doesn't have to be, it could be 20-second meditation or the Calm app. It could be anything.
Yeah.
The fact that you're reaching out for it will help bring more stuff in your way too. That's what I believe.
Yeah.
So intention means a lot.
Yeah, the first time I tried to meditate, I had a panic attack, and I was like, "I don't think this is how this works." Because I was trying to force myself to sit still and do it. Right?
I suck at this. I'm gonna do it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like missing the whole point. Then somebody was like, "Oh, we could just walk, do a walking meditation." And I was like, "Oh, I can do that." Right. Like, but my judgment mind is so rigid. Right. Someone has to tell me that I can do a walking meditation. Someone has to give me permission to do that, right? Then I looked it up. And I'm like, oh, there actually is a walking meditation. Like, and that's just where you're mindful as you walk. Pay attention to your step. Right. What's my hand doing? And you're walking, right? And your brain's looking all around, thinking of, is that a snake? That's not a snake. Is that a bird over there? That's not a bird. Where's your mom at? She's over there. You know what I mean? Like, my mind's doing all this stuff. But at the same time, it's also paying attention to the walking. And that was my entryway into meditation, walking meditation. Because it gave my thinking mind so much to do that the rest of me that was paying attention to this step and then where my hands were and the breath and all that. And is my breath in step with the step? Is it in sync with the step or not?
Rhythm.
Is there a rhythm? Finding that rhythm, that's how I got into the meditation, because that's what gave me a glimpse into what you're talking about, this calmness, this still, this emptying space, was walking meditation. So if you're listening to this and you've Googled Kriya and you're thinking, I'm not doing that, maybe try starting with a walking.
Start out somewhere.
Start somewhere. Yeah. Yeah.
And some people go out and meditate in or just hike for long periods of time, and they feel a connection between the land and the earth and themselves too. After a couple of days, they really get mellow, and they, you know, we fall back into it. The whole thing to get it is to get out of yourself, reduce the ego, reduce the victimization, reduce old pains.
Yeah.
And if you're carrying a lot of that stuff around, you can go get recovery and get secondary recovery or get some professional help to knock out that stuff, because it can be done.
Yeah.
My things are gone. Some of my stuff from 25, 30 years ago, 35 years ago, it never crossed my mind anymore. Wounds and hurts that I never thought I would get over don't exist anymore. So all those scars can be cleaned up so the mind can connect as well. You want to clean that stuff up.
Yeah. And it's about turning, I think it's more about turning down the thinking mind and all those things than it is about trying to turn up the God volume. You know what I mean? Like, it's about turning down the other stuff.
Creating,
because to me, the God thing, if it's this energy thing, right, it's always there, right? Like, what's interesting is scripture says the rocks cry out to God. the heavens declare the glory of God, right? Which is saying it's right there in plain sight. It's in nature. It's right there. It's happening. So it's not hard to connect to it. It's just that I'm so noisy all the time that I'm not paying it. I'm not even hearing it. It's
the homeostasis of the human being is God consciousness. It wants to come in and calm us down. That energy wants to come in.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what's kind of crazy is I've never really read any kind of any books, never taken courses on religion. I didn't even make it through communion in the Catholic Church, and I've never read the Bible.
Uh-huh.
I don't know any of that stuff. What I do know is a practical manner. I'm a hustler in a way. I want to get to the shortest solution. So here it is, me bypassing a lot of stuff and going right to focused action.
Yeah.
And having that crazy experience. My life with just, weird.
Well, that's the beauty of the 12-step program, because it gives you the ability, it gives you permission to have a God of your own understanding.
Yeah.
And years in recovery, I clung to the God of my understanding, the God of my youth or what I was, So I had this constant kind of pressure on myself for what God was or wasn't, which didn't allow me to actually experience God. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm constantly trying to, if it's not X, Y, Z, then it's not happening for real.
Yeah. So
by kind of, it's like beginner's mind.
Child.
Which again, here's Jesus. You can't get to the kingdom of heaven unless you become like these little ones.
Drop the thinking mind and your predispositions away. Drop it all.
Yeah.
And there's maybe some value in that.
Right.
Just simplify.
Yeah, it's like the worst thing I did was go to seminary for my real relationship with God, because I learned all this stuff and it's gotten in the way, because all I really needed to do was sit down, shut up, and close my eyes.
Yeah, but everybody's got a different process,
That's true, right. Yeah. I shouldn't be judgmental myself.
Critical. Yeah. But it's still, it's the intention. It's what you believe in. That 3,000, 5,000 year old book, I think they worded it a different way, but maybe it's electrons. There's electrons whirling around electrons, maybe a very, very fine, fine wavelength. And they think everything operates in there. And it's intention, and it's prayer, and it's belief.
Mm.
And maybe the thing that they think lives forever, your consciousness, your awareness, maybe that travels in there. Maybe it doesn't go anywhere. Maybe it reforms. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that could be crazy. But the only thing that I know is it made me a better person. It brought more love into my life, and it gave me a deeper life and a successful life.
Yeah,
And the promises of the program coming true over time have really come through in eightfold. I just went through something, a painful period. I'm in the midst of it right now, some loss and that kind of stuff. But even that. As I'm going through, I'm gut-wrenching and, feeling the grief, and I know writing about it and almost feeling like I want to throw up. Just really, really deep stuff. In the back of my mind, there's a little guy going, lucky you.
Huh.
Lucky you. You're going to take your stuff to a whole nother level because you're not running from the fear. You're embracing it, and it's a boogeyman anyway. And all the hurt, all the pain, everything has directly to do with your dependencies and what I am dependent upon.
Yeah.
How people see me, how I see myself, money, sugar, caffeine, cars, being an American, white, male, all of it, So I'm not free to float anymore. I'm those things, but in my subconscious dependencies,
Yeah.
So, and the more pain that I have, it strips them away, and I'm a freer man, and then, no limits.
Yeah.
So.
Redemptive suffering, the suffering's not wasted.
Yeah.
But it's also real.
It's real.
Just because it's redemptive, right, and you can grow and learn, doesn't make it any less painful.
No, right? No. And there's actual grieving that goes on. It's lost. I'm a human being.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's all part of the attachment to stuff, but the big attachments are the painful ones. And And it's part of the range of the whole human experience. So, but, you know, the funny thing is we're sitting here talking about, like, you know, cosmic consciousness and
yeah,
where we came from.
Yeah.
I was fighting with a cop on the hood of a car as the five of them were beating me with billy clubs once, you know, when I was
yeah
18 or 19, you know.
Yeah.
And lost little angry, scared soul that had no direction.
Yeah.
And a program, which is divinely inspired, 6-step program, same as Jesus has walking around the Mediterranean, turned into a 12-step program, which now is this.
Yeah.
Basic principles.
Yeah.
You know, and it's given me a life, which is amazing.
Yeah. Well, thanks, man. Thanks for being on. Thanks for listening. And if you're looking for some answers, you want to get deeper, things aren't making sense, and you want to get to the next level, just reach out. We're happy to help. We can connect you to counselors, therapists. We offer some free coaching opportunities, and we're happy to just get on the phone and just let you know that you're not alone. So this has been The Most High Show. Thank you to Dean for being here, and thank you all you listening. Peace.
Thank you.